Education, Leadership, and Beyond, Surviving and Thriving. My name is Andrew Marana, host of the show, and it is show number 253. Happy to be here live on Facebook, proud member of the Education Podcast Network, Voice Ed Radio Canada, or wherever you are tuning in. I am excited to be on, excited at summertime, and excited to talk to today's guest, Peter Kahn. Very interesting, Peter. I'm really curious about spoken word and poetry slams and writing. Peter is an educator. He's an author. He's a poet. Right? Just sounds cool even saying it. But he was also involved in Respect the Mic, a compilation of a number of poems from his former students, kids he taught, people he was around. And we're going to dive into this book here, Respect the Mic, Peter Kahn. And Peter, I think you shared this with a couple people here, Danny Sullivan and Franny Choi or Coy. But we're going to meet Peter in a moment here. Again, show number 253. If you're watching live, jump in, say hello, introduce yourself, tell me where you're watching from, and certainly ask a question for Peter, and we will get that on the air. I do want to give a shout out to the Coaching and Leadership Journal. This show is going to be about writing, creativity, expression, and certainly the Coaching and Leadership Journal is a great resource. A lot of writings in there, comes out monthly. Dan Spanauer, check it out at theleadershippublishingteam.com. They are sponsoring the show, and there is a discount, Marada 20. You can put that in there, the Coaching and Leadership Journal. Excellent resource, whether you're a writer, a school leader, coach. I use it all the time. So check them out at theleadershippublishingteam.com. And that discount code, again, is Marada 20. All right, let's get rolling. I want to shout out here. If you're watching, I got my Taking Care Business shirt on with the Elvis logo with the lightning bolt. Action, Taking Care of Business. Patrick Dunn is coming to Port Jervis this weekend for a fundraiser. And Patrick is an incredible Elvis performer, award-winning, won the championship a couple years ago. So I want to give a shout out, special shirt here, Patrick, for that. All right, let's dive in to Respect the Mic. Here's a poem by Jada Mayweather. It's called Unwanted Pill Addiction. As many of you know, if you know me, I have ADD. It's a superpower, not a disability. But Peter shared that Jada wrote this while in high school. It's called Unwanted Pill Addiction. In first grade, I learned what ADHD is, uncontrollably dancing to a distorted tune. I can relate to that, Jada. No, I can't stop tapping my foot. I should be learning to form a proper sentence. I can't be like the other kids. Everyone is asleep during nap time, but I can't stop hooing. I'm a night owl, staying up for my next dose. I become an eager pill taker. Pills take away my appetite. Pills leave a lump in my throat every morning. Thick saliva sticks to my esophagus. My teacher says, Jada is an excellent student now, devouring every compliment the class gives me with these pills. I'm used to the smell of the doctor's office. My prescription stays the same. But the distorted tune I have been dancing to has become a screech while the pills fade like background music. Incredible, right? Written by a sophomore in high school, now older. There's a collection of these, again, Respect the Mic, put together by Peter Kahn. Let's meet Peter and bring him in the show here. Live here on Education, Leadership, Beyond. Peter, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. 253. That's a lot of shows.
And you're in, man.
You think you're like 90 years old and have that many shows. You look like you're 13. How'd you do that?
Surviving and thriving, Peter.
There you go.
Surviving and thriving. Peter, tell me, do you remember Jada? Do you remember her writing that? Do you remember putting it in the book? Tell me about that poem you just heard.
Of course. Yeah, I met Jada and most of the students in that book when they're freshmen. So I would go in with alumni. We'd push into all the freshman English classes to do poetry units. And as a freshman, Jada was kind of all over the place. But you saw something there where we recruited her for our spoken word club. We knew it would be good for her and she'd be good for us. And over time, she got really into it and poetry became very important to her. She's probably, I don't know, 20, 21 now. I saw her, I was visiting Chicago in the spring and got to see her, and she's doing great and she still writes.
Awesome. Well, I was proud to read her poem there and certainly can relate to that. Guest, this is Peter Kahn, way of Columbus, Ohio, via Chicago, via London. Peter, you've done a lot. You kind of have a lot of different hands doing some different things. But let's start right off. For those that don't know, we all know what poetry is, right? We know that word, but spoken word. Tell me about the phrase spoken word and how it relates to poetry and what it is.
I mean, spoken word in essence is taking a poem and saying it out loud, right? But it came out of the Black Arts Movement in terms of the spoken word movement. It's connected to slam. So poetry slam is a competitive form of sharing one's poem out loud. And spoken word is, it's encompassed within that, but it's non-competitive, generally speaking. And I follow in the lineage of Patricia Smith and a couple of my mentors from England, Roger Robinson, Malaika Booker. It's got to be strong on the page before we bring it to the stage, right? So there's still an art and a craft to the writing of it. And then you work on how can we present it to the audience in a compelling, authentic way. And that book, Respect the Mic, those poems have to hold up on the page. We also had them video them, and we have a free website where 70 out of the 76 performed the poems so that you could read along and see how they would read it.
I love that. It's got to be strong on the page before you bring it to the stage. You're even rhyming some of your sentences here.
There you go.
Yeah, that's incredible, yep. Peter. Peter, would you say you're an author? Would you say you're a poet? You're a teacher? You're an educator? What would you call yourself? Or are you all of the above?
I'm all of the above, but I'm an educator at heart. That's what's important to me. I don't even like poetry, to be honest with you, but really? I saw it as such an important tool that I embraced it. And even my own book of poetry, I wouldn't have written that if I wasn't an educator. But that was really, I wanted to be a role model and to live up to the expectations of my mentors. But ultimately, I'm an educator, and poetry, particularly spoken word poetry, is a really important lever to get kids engaged with school, give them voice, give them efficacy, make them feel important in the world.
Yeah. It reaches all races, all kinds, all shapes, all sizes, all colors.
Oh, you name it. Yeah. I mean, across the board, I've worked in, I don't know, probably close to 100 schools at this point between London, Chicago, Columbus, and a few other places. And I've done it with kids as young as 8 years old, adults in their 80s. Doesn't really matter. It's an important vehicle for getting people to share about themselves.
Yeah. How did you become interested in that? What sparked your interest?
So basically, I was a traditional English teacher, and my least favorite unit to teach was poetry. I was terrible at it. I didn't like poetry when I was a kid or I was a student. So I brought in a student, a former student named Jonathan Vaughn, to a sophomore English class. I said, Jonathan, I'm destroying poetry in the worst ways. I need your help. Because he actually liked poetry. And he did. He shared some of his poetry, got some kids writing. They asked about, he brought up Poetry Slam. He said, could we try that? I said, sure, let's do it. And I don't know, a week or two later, we had a Poetry Slam in our class, and the kid with the lowest grade in class won.
Wow.
And everybody was like, holy crap, what just happened here? And most importantly, that kid looked at himself and was like, what just happened here? I don't care about school. Why did I invest so much in this? And it transformed his high school journey. Wow. And I saw that time and again. I've seen that time and again over the years. I just saw it recently in Columbus. So it's kind of like this magic wand. Not to say it works with everybody by any stretch. Yeah. But oftentimes it's that kid who is most disengaged in school gets most engaged via poetry. And it's just this beautiful transformation.
Peter, how close would you say the Poetry Slam and the writing the poems is to to rap, rap music and that? Is it go hand in hand? Are they brother, sister? Are they cousins? How close are they?
I'd say they're cousins. When I started our club in 1999, I leaned heavily on lyrics by Black Star, so Mos Def and Talib Kweli. Some of my students are way into them. So yeah. I look for metaphors and similes in their lyrics to kind of make that bridge. And someone taught me, I don't remember anymore, actually, this guy named Scorpio, who unfortunately is no longer living, but a poet in England who was a rapper as well. And he taught that poetry, rap stands for rhythm and poetry, right? So you can't have rap without poetry.
Yeah.
So I bring that up with students that, you know, if you like rap and any kind of music lyrics, let's dig into it. I bet you're going to find similes and metaphors. I bet you're going to find some personification. All these poetic devices, you're going to find them in your favorite song lyrics.
Mm. And would rappers like Eminem, would they come into your classroom and be part of this discussion? I mean, because that guy blows me away with his words and lyrics and the way he puts them together. Would you reference rappers?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I had, you know, I was fortunate enough to have alumni as my assistant over the years.
Yeah.
And two of them were rappers, right? So they would lead a rap workshop each unit. And one of them would show a video of Eminem talking about rhyming with the word orange and door hinge.
I've seen that.
You know,
I didn't think that was on 60 would bring minutes or so. Yeah,
I think you're right. It might have been a clip from 60 Minutes. Yeah. So he would reference that, and you know, they'd reference Tyler the Creator. They would reference J. Cole, various rappers over the years. And I would use that. So there's a line by Lil Wayne, Real G's move in silence like lasagna, right? That's brilliant. And you throw that out there, kids, you know, one kid, you'll be like, why is that a striking line? Why is that really interesting? Because they use lasagna. That's kind of weird how lasagna moves. And then another kid would say, no, it's because the G in lasagna is silent. It's not lasagna, it's a lasagna. And everybody's like, oh, wow, oh man, that's amazing, right? And then what poetic device did he use? Oh yeah, he used a simile there. So yeah, I try to incorporate that. I was just sitting down with my nephew, he's 12 years old, he likes rap, and he gave me a striking line from a Lil Baby song that I'm gonna use this semester as I'm getting students to see, you know, that connection between music and poetry.
Peter, for novices of poetry like myself, you know, we think about is just the rhyming, right? You know, the words that rhyme and that that's poetry. So many of the poems in here, including the one I just read, aren't. So what would you say for someone that doesn't know about poetry, for the ones that don't rhyme, what would you say about that to help us understand it?
So poetry can rhyme, but free verse does not have a rhyme scheme. And, you know, I had a former student who's in there, Iman Shumpert, right? So he's our most famous alum. He won an NBA championship, right?
Yeah.
You know, so I remember he was trying to flex his poetic muscles a little bit more. And my assistant at the time, Christina Santana, and I said, all right, Iman, no rhyming for a while. We want you to build these other muscles up. That you're already good at rhyming. Let's work on metaphor. Let's work on simile. Let's work on maybe some internal rhyme instead of end rhyme, see where that takes you. And later on, he talked about being forced to stop made him a better rapper in the end.
Wow.
You know, so rhyming, you know, I have nothing against rhyming poetry, but generally speaking, if you look in that book, 90% of those poems are going to be free verse where there is not end rhyme involved.
Respect the mic is what Peter's referencing. Again, if you're watching live, jump in, say hello, introduce yourself, let us know where you're watching from. Peter, there's so much technology out there these days. I have not gotten involved with AI. I'm kind of like, I don't know, I haven't touched it. But what would you say like AI is going to do to this? You know, if our kids just punching in stuff on AI, ChatGPT, and, you know, is it going to hurt the art form?
I'm afraid it will. Ultimately, what I try to push kids to write is because, I don't like poetry. I prefer reading a novel or teaching a novel. So I like a good story. So I've always focused on personal narrative poems, right? So it's a poem where you get to tell a story poetically from your life. So that's kind of hard for ChatGPT, from what I gather, to replicate, right? But I also, certainly since COVID, but even a little bit before that, I try to build in writing time during class, and I'm getting kids to write by hand. So I think it's a little bit harder for them versus, you know, doing a paper via ChatGPT. Yeah. But certainly ChatGPT can produce poems. If you give the guidelines, it'll spit something out very quickly. Sometimes it's not bad. Other times you can tell it's rather stiff, and it tends to, you know, because most people think poetry is about rhyming, and that's where the data is coming from. A lot of the stuff will end up rhyming. But yeah, it is, you know, ChatGPT is pretty scary. I just took my nephew to see Mission Impossible, and the nemesis is AI, you know, and what nefarious things AI can do. So it's concerning to me for sure. Yeah. And as an educator, we have enough up against us. Now you add this layer in, it's tough. It's a tough profession right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I haven't touched it. People, you could use it for this. You could. Yeah. I feel like it's gonna make us less smart. It's gonna, you know, take away our creativity.
I agree.
You know, our flow there. Speaking of creativity, we probably watched it during COVID 6-7 times. My family, my kids could say every word. We have fallen in love with Hamilton. You've lived in Chicago a long time. I'm sure it was on Broadway there. What would you say that the play Hamilton did for spoken word? Is that the biggest example there is?
You know, it had an impact, but certainly with my students, not a huge one. No more than Mos Def and Talib Kweli did in the late 90s, right? I think it certainly didn't hurt. Same with Amanda Gorman, you know, and her fame. That certainly didn't hurt. But if you ask kids, did you come to our spoken word club because you are in love with Hamilton? Not many of them would say that. Do you like Hamilton? Oh, yeah. And they might be able to recite songs from it. So I'd say it was influential, but not instrumental, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. And your opinion of Lin-Manuel?
Oh, I mean, talented as hell.
Yeah.
I took my parents to see it on Broadway, New York.
Did? Wow.
We loved it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a genius, no doubt about it.
Yeah. And you might be building the next Lin-Manuel. I mean, the you know, putting this out there, making it cool, making writing cool. I think it's so cool. Peter, tell me about your writing process. You've said multiple times you don't like poetry. You're not, you know, but you have a creative side yourself. Tell me about you creating content, you writing. What's your process? Are you in a coffee shop downtown somewhere? Or are you in a quiet, you know, office in your home? How do you do it?
I mean, pretty much because I don't consider myself much of a poet. I was part of a writing collective in London, which I mentioned, Roger Robinson and Malaika Booker. They formed something called Malaika's Poetry Kitchen, which literally was in her flat in Brixton in South London on Friday nights. It wasn't actually in her kitchen. It was in her bedroom. But Malaika's poetry bedroom had a different connotation, so they chose Poetry Kitchen, like cooking stuff up. So I did that for 2 years, every Friday night, pretty much, for 3 hours.
Cool.
Where we would talk about poetry and then write together, and then we would do performances together. So that kind of got me going, and I ended up getting in. I did some summer writing retreats, and then I got my MFA in creative writing. And what I've learned for myself is I need to be around other people writing.
Mm.
So when I would do our slam team and I'd give a prompt, oftentimes I would sit and I would write with them. And that's where my poems would come from when I went to my retreats. I'll journal on my own, but in terms of writing poems, that first draft, I pretty much need to be around other people who are writing. And then the revision process, that's more a isolated thing. I might go to a coffee shop, I might sit on my couch, I might do it on an airplane, whatever it is. Yeah. And, you know, I think for poetry, there's a craft to it. And the first draft, you're kind of getting your idea down. It's actually in the revision process that the poem gets formed. And in my own collection, I'd say the average number of drafts with revisions is probably 10 per poem. Right.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. And every once in a while, something will come out and it'll just be tinkering with it. But for the most part, yeah, it's getting feedback from people. you know, there might be things as a writer that make sense to you, and you show it to somebody and they're like, oh, I thought you were talking about X. And it's like, no, I was talking about Y, you know? So getting that feedback from people and then sitting on it for a bit. There's a poet, this amazing poet, Gwendolyn Brooks from Chicago, the first Black writer to win a Pulitzer Prize in poetry. She was the poet laureate of the United States, but poet laureate of Illinois for many years. In any case, I heard a story that if there was a single word in a poem that she wasn't quite happy with, she'd put it in a drawer and she'd keep taking it out. It might be 2 years before that poem gets published because of a single word that she wasn't happy with, you know? So I think it takes a while to put a poetry collection together because you do have to kind of just stew on it and come back to it and contemplate and show it to somebody else, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Tell me about that, working with high schoolers. Again, Peter's got Respect the Mic here, a number of poems of his students. Tell me about that conversation, that interaction. I mean, kids can be fragile, you know, right? Traditionally, they do the assignment, they get the grade, and then they move on. But you're telling me that this is a back and forth thing here. What was that conversation like with a teenager?
Well, it's still happening. I'm still working in schools, right? I'm here in Columbus, Ohio, home of the Buckeyes, doing that. But ultimately, you know, there's generally speaking going to be resistance when you say, in part because it's spoken word, which means we're going to ask you to get up and share in front of your classmates and your teenagers, and you don't like making yourselves vulnerable, right? So part of it is that buy-in and showing them Iman Shumpert writes poetry and Zion Williamson writes poetry and Damian Lillard writes poetry and Tyler Lockett writes poetry, right? So these athletes who utilize poetry to help themselves, right? So get a little bit of buy-in going, and then it's arm them with some skills and terminology and show them contemporary poetry that they can relate to and be inspired by. That's why this book is so important in the classroom, right? Because it came from oftentimes high school students when they wrote them, right? And then the fifth day of a unit, typically they're gonna get up and share one of their poems. So a couple of things we do to cut the tension. One, we let them come up in groups, so they're not, the spotlight isn't solely on them. And two, this is something a student came up with in part. We'll say, you're gonna say your name and the audience is gonna say hi back to you. So I'd be like, hi, my name's Peter. Hi, Peter. And my poem is good. Yes, it is, from the audience, right? So things to cut the tension. And instead of hearing people say, oh, my poem sucks, but Mr. Khan's making me read it, it's no, my poem is good, right? So you got this back and forth going there. And then in spoken word, if you hear a striking line, you snap during the poem. So you got that kind of interaction, and then clapping before and after. So you try to make it into a fun experience, right? And in the writing prompts, you always want to give them opportunities to write something that's humorous, lighthearted, or if they want to go there, they can write something more serious, more poignant, but you don't want to force them into that, because that's like emotional blackmail, right? So it's pretty much, here are some options. You choose what direction you want to go with it. And if this is a time where you feel like this is where you want to unload about your parents' divorce or your friend who got shot or whatever it is, then we're going to try to create this safe, welcoming environment. And I always had good relationship with the school social worker. So if someone said something that was alarming to me, I would make sure the school social worker knew about it, so there could be that kind of follow-up in place.
That's tremendous. If you're an educator and you're listening to this, what a way to make kids feel comfortable, that verbal affirmation that their poem is good, the greeting, breaking the tension. And that's incredible. If you hear a striking line, I love it. I love it. That's incredible.
That's part of the wider spoken word community, to the point where, you know, on SNL, that might be something they make fun of us for, right? But it works.
Wow. Again, I want to welcome in our guests watching live. If you're watching, leave us a question or a comment, jump in the show. Peter, you're an educator 30 plus years. You've lived in London, Chicago. You're back in Columbus. Tell me about taking care of your own self on this journey. You've been teaching English, writing, and poetry. How have you taken care of yourself on this journey outside the classroom?
Well, I'm an introvert. So by the end of the day, so when I was teaching in Oak Park in Chicago, right, I'd get there, I don't know, 7:30, 7:45, teach during the day. 2 days a week was after school club. From November, end of November through March, we had our Louder Than a Bomb Slam. So that was every day of the week. So pretty much 5 days a week, I was there till 5:30, 6 at night. So wow. I'd get home, eat, and collapse. So I've been exercising every morning, assuming I don't have the flu or something, every morning for the last 20, 25 years.
Wow.
So that's one thing I do. So it meant getting up at 5 in the morning so I could go for a run or lift weights or whatever it was. But that was a really important thing. Try to eat healthy. I try to journal when I can. I read detective novels a lot just to get my mind off of things, right? If you're an educator, particularly an English teacher, if yes. you're reading anything, you're thinking about the classroom. It's like, oh, yes. I could use this in the classroom.
Yes.
But
yes.
if it's a detective novel, I'm probably not going to use it in the classroom. I can just revel in it and get my mind off of things. So those are some of the things that I put in place. And now part of my semi-retirement is I don't do mornings. And I'm very upfront with schools. I won't be there before 11 o'clock. Preferably afternoon. And I'm here now to be available to my family and to see my nephew after school or go to his basketball or soccer games, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, being around family, seeing friends, you know, typical stuff. But ultimately, for a teacher, particularly an English teacher, you're lesson planning, then you're classroom management, you're throwing yourself into the class, and then you're grading papers. And you're falling asleep at 8 o'clock on a Friday night when your friends are going out. That's not sustainable. You have to figure out ways of working around that and not just finding joy in the classroom, but finding joy elsewhere.
Yeah. Great answer there. Surviving and thriving. What a great answer, Peter. Peter, how'd you deal with plagiarism as an English teacher and a writer? Is that something that bothered you or you knew kids were doing it? How'd you deal with that?
So maybe, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, we had our freshman or sophomore slam finals. So basically we would do these units and then we'd have in-class poetry slams. We never showed scores. Students would vote anonymously for their classmates. And then the teacher and us would choose their champ. And we'd have semifinals and finals. So for the finals, there's an in-school field trip. Our superintendent would be a guest judge. We'd bring in alumni, bring in a professional poet. So this one year, this girl borrows from, 20 Stone Pilots or some group I'd never heard of, right? But anyway, apparently her poem was their song lyrics. I didn't know. I'd never heard that song. Well, some kids came to my office. She was named Runner Up, I think, and came to my office and said, Mr. Khan, hate to tell you, but so-and-so plagiarized from 20 Stone Pilots. I'm like, huh? So we go and we Google, and sure enough, it was damn near the same thing.
Wow.
So thereafter, what we would do is we'd take quotes from their poems. They'd have to turn their poems in digitally to us. We'd copy and paste and Google them and make sure that they weren't. And if we caught them plagiarizing, we'd have that conversation, that yeah. awkward conversation with them.
Yeah.
But generally, because we're asking for personal narrative poems, it's kind of hard to plagiarize that. And again, if they're right, they start writing in class, hopefully they got some momentum, they're into it, they're not going to feel inclined to plagiarize. But, you know, just like anything else, it's going to happen. Kids are going to cheat. Kids are going to plagiarize. But we put in some guardrails after that embarrassing situation.
Yeah, sure. Peter, again, living around the globe, different experiences, different schools, different people. What'd you learn by living in England for so many years?
I learned a lot about being an American and our ethnocentric views here in America, and how the rest of the world viewed us. I remember being in line in a pub once, and someone heard my accent and they said, we don't serve your kind here. You know, you guys just started a war in Afghanistan. I'm not going to serve you a pint. Another time I was there with a Malaika's Kitchen poetry reading on September 12th, 2001, right? So again, I'm going up to get a glass of wine or something. I'm nervous about this poetry reading. And the guy hears my accent and he says, you know what Malcolm X said, chickens come home to roost. like it was our fault about 9/11. This is a day after I was expecting, you know, most people were actually quite kind about it. Asked if I had family in New York, but this guy, it's like, hey, you're American. You got what you deserve. So, you know, you had to take a hard look in the mirror, ultimately, about America. But you also appreciate certain things by being away from it, too. Our healthcare system is far superior, for instance, than in the UK. But I also got to meet friends from all over the world. And you realize, you know, we're in the United States. You might go in eighth grade to Washington, D.C., this big class trip. Well, if you're in the UK, you go to France, or you go to Spain, or you go to Australia, you know? So there's just, they had a much broader sense of what the world is all about. And I learned from them. So my best friends were from Trinidad and Grenada and Guyana and Nigeria and Ghana. Wow. And Jamaica, right? That's where their family hail from, or they were from. So I got to hear about their experiences. And I visited my friend in Trinidad a couple of times and got to have that experience, you know? So it made me grow up a lot and just look at the world through a different lens.
Sure. Yeah, good for you going there and experiencing it. Another passion of yours, in addition to the spoken word, is the Buckeyes of Ohio State, the shoe. Tell me about your love for the Buckeyes, and is that a family thing? Grew up there. What is it about the Buckeyes that you fall
in love with? We moved from New York to Columbus, Ohio, home of the Buckeyes, when I was six.
Wow!
Right, and that was culture shock. It was damn near a cow town when we got here. Like, you saw cows in the fields when you're driving around, and we're coming from New York, right? But that year, Woody Hayes was the coach, and Archie Griffin was about to win his first Heisman Trophy. And you would go to school, and on Fridays, you'd wear Ohio State colors, getting ready for Saturday's game. And on Michigan Fridays, you would wear Ohio State uniforms. So I put on my number 45, Archie Griffin. You know, we had to go get Ohio State stuff. And you just were kind of inculcated into it. And there wasn't much else to do in Columbus, right? But watch the Buckeyes.
Wow.
So we got into it. My dad got into it. And it became this thing. And I remember when I was living in London in 2002, Ohio State was playing Michigan. If they won, they'd go to the national championship.
Mm.
And back then, it was very hard. I basically try to listen on the radio to a game, or I'd call my dad and he'd do a play-by-play with me. Oh, well, I put something on, part of something called Bucknuts, right, for all these Buckeye fanatics. And you have insiders that tell you about recruiting and all this stuff, right? I get made fun of it by my students, rightfully so. Well, anyway, through Bucknuts, I posted and I'm like, look, I'm in London. Are there any London Buckeye fans who I could watch the Michigan game with? And on the military bases, they had access to the game.
Wow.
So some military family invited me. It's like an hour train ride outside of London. And I got to watch Ohio State beat Michigan to go to the national championship. And they let me use their phone to call my dad occasionally. And it was just an amazing experience.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's embarrassing how much of a fanatic I am, really. Because when they lose, it hurts.
Oof.
And, you know, I'm bummed out. And you know, at school, I would talk it up. And if I lost, people would come by like they were consoling me, like someone died. And that's terrible.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm embarrassed by that. But I love it nonetheless. And it's something my dad and I love to do together. And now my nephew will watch some games with us, which is fun.
Beautiful. Hey, fan is short for fanatic. So that's the definition of it. What are those things they put on the helmet? It looks like a little butterfly.
Those Buckeye leaves. So it's basically, if you did, you know, put in extra effort, made a really good play, you'd get these Buckeye leaves. And the idea was, by the time you graduated, your whole helmet would be covered with them. So like,
wow.
Chris Spielman, there wouldn't be a space on his helmet. He had so many Buckeye leaves. More recently, CJ Stroud or Marv Harrison Jr.
Awesome. Awesome stuff there, Peter. This is interesting. Thank you for making, writing and poetry cool, right? Making it something that kids want to do. Normally it's a chore, but you brought some fun to it. So thank you for that.
Well, I try. Thank you. And thanks for having me.
Yeah. So speaking of spoken word, you know, my theme, Peter, is surviving and thriving. And I ask guests here, you know, if we take out the "and," what's your one word? What's your one habit? What's your one action for surviving blank thriving? What are you putting in there that helps you keep going and keep moving?
I love connecting people. That's my favorite thing to do. Is connecting people who are both have similar interests but don't know about one another, and seeing where that synergy can go. And I love when I make connections and suddenly they're lifelong friends. 10 years later, they're friends. I never see them, but they see each other. I love that kind of thing. So making connections to people, I love doing that. Helps me thrive as a human being.
Awesome. What's something I didn't ask you that you wanted to talk about?
You know, ultimately, I would love to see this kind of programming in every school in America, if not the world, right? And we've been up against three things over the years. One is funding, right? Two is curricular time. And that's intertwined with standardized testing. And how if something is not easy to quantify, like creativity, then it gets pushed to the side. And three is just the larger buy-in that kind of connects to those two things. So I would love to solve that conundrum so that the experience our students had at Oak Park and River Forest High School in Chicago, students in London have had, that becomes something where it's like mathematics. Everybody's doing it because everybody sees the value of it.
Yeah. Great answer there. And hopefully this show will get some word out to some educators. And Peter, if people wanted to reach out to you to learn more about it, what would be the best way for them to contact you?
I mean, I don't do social media other than LinkedIn. So via LinkedIn is probably the easiest way. Or through my website, there's a contact page, and both those things are scrolling down there. So one or the other. And if you reach out, I'll respond.
Awesome. And that website is scrolling below. But if you're listening on Spotify or wherever you're listening, that website is www.poet-educatorpeterkahn.org. So definitely reach out to Peter, get spoken word and poetry slam coming to your school. Peter, let's get to rapid fire. These are quick answers. First thing that pops to your head, are you ready?
I am ready.
Here we go. Last book you read.
I brought it here. Bewilderment by Richard Powers.
You recommend?
Check it out. It's beautiful. Beautiful. Wow. As well as, I'm going to throw in a bonus, Sad Black Girl. Super Sad Black Girl by one of the Respect the Mic poets, Diamond Sharp. Oh, very powerful.
Awesome. Last movie you saw?
Mission Impossible today with my nephew.
There you go. Favorite dish?
Favorite dish is probably chicken sog if it's done well in London, in an Indian restaurant there. I love it.
Okay. Give me your rating on Chicago deep dish pizza. You all in on that or what?
When I was younger, I was all in on it. The older I got, the more exercise I'd have to do to work it off. So yeah, it would be a rare treat. But yeah, it's delicious.
Deep dish equals big gut. You've traveled exactly. The world, New York, Chicago, Ohio. Your favorite place to travel?
My favorite place, I love going back to London. It's an incredible city. It's so diverse and international, and the food's incredible, and the people are interesting. So London, England, for sure.
On September 1st, I will be glad that I fill in the blank.
I'll be glad that I get to go back in schools here in Columbus, Ohio, home of the Buckeyes, and utilize Respect the Mic to try to get kids to see their voices as mattering.
Awesome. The best writers are the best because, fill in the blank.
They read a lot.
Mm-hmm. A pet peeve of yours?
People not following through when they say they're going to do something. That's frustrating as hell and more common.
I'm with you on that. Urban Meyer, hero or villain?
A little bit of both. Certainly when he's at Florida, he was a villain. At Ohio State, something of a hero. I'd say at this point, he's right in the middle.
Yeah, got himself and jammed up a little bit there and not making good decisions. At 8 a.m. on Saturday morning, I feel, fill in the blank.
I feel like staying in bed. Why not? It's Saturday.
Get that rest. Best takeaway from this show for our guests.
Best takeaway from this show. Have important conversations about education with other people. See what comes of it.
Mm-hmm. Great answer. One thing you're curious about?
I'm curious about what the impact of AI is going to be. Hopefully, it's going to lead to better cancer treatments, for instance. Hopefully, it's going to lead to helping with climate change. And hopefully, it won't lead to the end of the world in a negative sense.
As all the movies show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Something about Peter Kahn that people do not know about.
So the only type of exercise I enjoy is basketball. I'm terrible at it. I'm short, right? So one quick story. We used to do teachers versus students, and there was this one game, and it was 6-6. We were playing to 7, win by 1. And I stole a ball from a student, and I dribbled down the court. And a student who was about 6'5" went up to block my shot. I faked him out. I put it in, and I won the game. He went on to play college ball and play overseas. And his big brother is the person who's running our spoken word program. And I said, you have to call Adam right now and tell him what just happened. And Adam was in the middle of taking an exam at University of Wisconsin and called his brother back. He's like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, Mr. Kahn made me tell you that he scored the winning basket. So I'm 5'6", terrible at basketball, but I do have that one shining moment.
Wow, that's so funny. You remember that?
Never forget that.
Yeah, you're a poet. You're an artist. I'm a quote person. I love quotes. So why don't you bring us home? Why don't you end the show here with a quote?
So there's a quote that I've shared with students over the years by Eldridge Cleaver, Black Panther. Hating others is loving oneself less. Mm. Hating others is loving oneself less. I think that's beautiful. And he wrote that in prison in that book, Black Ice. I believe it's called Black Ice. Wow. Anyway, yeah, I love that quote.
This is Peter Kahn, friends. Certainly check out his work. And again, his book, a compilation of poems and spoken word, written word by his former students, Respect the Mic. Peter, thanks so much. Again, his website is there. It's scrolling below. Peter, say it for us one more time, the website.
So it's poet-educator Peter Kahn, K-A-H-N,
.org, yeah.
Poet-educator Peter Kahn. .org, and it's Soul on Ice, not Black Ice. Black Ice was the name of a spoken word poet.
There we go.
The Eldridge Cleaver book is Soul on Ice. Thank you so much for having me.
Peter, stay on the line a second. We're going to sign off here, show number 253. If I could help you in any way, don't hesitate to reach out at Andrew Murata 21 on Twitter. Again, I want to thank today's sponsor, the Coaching and Leadership Journal. Written at the Leadership Publishing team. Use discount code Murata20 for your discount. We're going to sign off, Peter. I wish you the best and keep surviving and thriving.